This podcast is brought to you by Aviation Consumer Magazine, the consumer resource of pilots and aircraft owners.
Russ Niles reporting for AvWeb. We're with Lieutenant Paul McCaffrey. He's with the Santa Barbara Police Department. Lieutenant, there has been a lot of controversy around your department and what happened last Saturday with the detention of two very prominent aviators. How did the incident go down from the police perspective, and what's the fallout been?
Well, on the date of the incident, on August 28th at 10:53 in the morning at specific time, you know, we were here just, you know, minding our own business when our dispatch center got a call from the McKinney Police Department in Texas. Now, McKinney was on the phone with EPIC, stands for El Paso Intelligence Center, who had told McKinney that they were tracking a stolen plane that was due to land in Santa Barbara in about 15 minutes.
So both of these agencies were on the phone at the same time with you?
Well, McKinney was the go-between. So they were on the phone with one hand with EPIC, and on the other hand, with us. So they really ended up being the go-between in this delivery of information. I believe EPIC called McKinney because McKinney is the agency that had taken the original report of this Cessna that was reported stolen back in 2002. And so they were calling them just to let them know. And McKinney then, you know, called us because they still had this plane that was unrecovered and still listed as stolen.
Right. Okay, so we all know about the mix-up in the tail numbers and everything like that. What about the perceptions that have been raised about your department's handling of the situation? And can you put shed a little bit of light on what sort of processes kick into gear when you get a call like this?
Well, a couple things. First of all, when an aircraft coming into our airport, which happens to be about 12 miles away from our city limits, it's outside the city and surrounded by some unincorporated areas. We don't deal with stolen aircraft very often. I'll be first to say that we don't have a lot of experience in that field. And having a plane reported that's stolen, that's in the air, is, in my 30-year career, I haven't heard of that happening before. So it's not like this is something that happens, you know, every couple of months and, you know, we drill on. Now, when law enforcement gets calls from other law enforcement agencies about, you know, crimes and vehicles and things like that, that's a pretty common thing. And so on the one hand, we accept the information, and on the other hand, you know, we try to be prudent and, you know, double check things as best as we're able, just depending on the time and the circumstances. When you have a plane that's coming in 15 minutes, that doesn't give you a heck of a lot of time to be asking a lot of questions, especially when you're hearing about it not only from a local police department that's out of state, but from a federal agency, which really has about the same weight as getting a phone call from the FBI. So knowing that EPIC was involved was a pretty important catalyst for our actions.
The action that you took, what does that entail? What is the training that goes into to making sure that everybody comes out of that safely?
Well, we at least in California and most of the United States, we refer to it as a felony stop when you have a vehicle that's involved in a felony crime or some kind of crime of violence. Now, we're a lot more familiar with stopping automobiles than we are with stopping aircraft. But once the aircraft is on the land, then it really has a whole lot of similarities with a vehicle in that you really don't know who's inside. You don't know the circumstances of how they got in the plane. You know, the information was rather limited, so there was even, you know, a possibility that the people inside could have been, you know, forced at gunpoint by some third party to, you know, fly them to Santa Barbara destination. It really could be almost any number of scenarios, including ones involving the potential for, weapons and violence. So we treat these incidents very, very seriously. if I was to compare it to anything that would resonate with pilots, it would be like doing an aircraft safety check. When you haven't flown your plane for a couple of weeks, it's probably going to fly the same as it did the last time you landed at AOK. But there's a reason you go through the safety checks, and that's because the consequences of something going wrong are so severe. Well, the same with conducting a felony stop. Most of them don't result in gunplay. We realize that. But if there is an armed suspect or there is something going on, the consequences can be so severe that law enforcement agencies pretty much nationwide adopt a similar set of tactics to handle that situation.
Okay, in this case, it was four cars. How many officers?
Well, we had two Santa Barbara Police Department vehicles. They each have one officer. I believe there was an officer with the Sheriff's Department. They responded because that's really the jurisdiction that's closest to the airport, and they responded just because they got the call, and at the time we didn't know if the plane might be landing early or not. We wanted some other law enforcement presence. And then we had an airport police officer, which really, although they have some law enforcement responsibilities and training, are not fully trained, police officers. They have some responsibilities on the airport, but it doesn't extend beyond that, like regular police officers' training and responsibilities.
So you arrive at the airport, the airplane is there. What happens next?
Well, the tower, when it saw the plane, I mean, some of our checking was just, I mean, the basic things. The stolen plane was reported to be a Cessna. Well, it was a Cessna, and the serial number matched.
Or the registration number, the N number.
Yeah, the tail number or registration number matched the one that was reported to us as being the stolen. So there was a little bit of due diligence just to make sure there wasn't a mix-up in misidentifying the registration numbers. I mean, that certainly happens with license plates of cars where, one digit off could mean the difference between, your car parked in your garage and, some stolen car that's, a bunch of, wanted parolees are running around in. So you got to double check, the information that you can within the time frame and the circumstances you have, to do the checking. So we did that limited check. The vehicle landed, was directed to a specific area on our airport, and once there, the officers, did verbally call out to the occupants of the plane and ordered them out one by one.
Which is the normal way of doing things, right?
Yeah, that's the normal way of conducting what we call a felony stop. And then once the people are safely detained and secured, then we have an ability to just render the situation safe, and we move on from there.
Well, obviously the Kings were upset and didn't feel particularly safe with guns pointed at them. How safe is that? That has come up time and again as an issue. Somebody could have been accidentally shot.
It's hard to argue with that on a certain level, but at the same time, I mean, law enforcement is pretty well, shootings are pretty well covered in our media. And, I challenge, your readers or to really explain when in the United States or in California an officer conducting one of these stops is accidentally fired around and shot somebody. I mean, I guess there's always that potential, but our training is such, and this is one of the most basic things. I mean, it takes a lot of skills and abilities to be a police officer, just like it does to be a pilot. But, fundamentally, if you can't keep yourself safe and you can't keep other people safe, then you don't belong in the business. So, our goal in making a felony stop is to create a situation that's safe for the officers, that's safe for the people that we're dealing with, whether they're, innocent people like the Kings or whether they happen to be, wanted criminals, and also safe for bystanders. There's a lot of history and a lot of studies that have shown that if you don't take control of the scene, then things will unfold and, it winds up in foot chases and it winds up with people running around. And we've all seen the videos of where that can go. And a lot of that ends in disaster. So these stops, although it may to an untrained person appear very dangerous, it's kind of like to someone who's not a pilot, the idea of flying an aircraft, 6,000 feet, you know, a 3,200-pound aircraft, that's a pretty dangerous thing, too, to someone who's not trained to do it.
They're safely in the back of the police cars. That's when the real sort of investigation and the most important part of this process happens, right?
Yeah, it was only after. It was not before at any point, but only after the Kings were handcuffed and detained in the police cars. You know, they were safe. I mean, they were uncomfortable a little bit, but they were, you know, physically they were safe. It was only then we received information from Epic that led us down the path of realizing that there was a mistaken identification of this plane, that there was actually a second plane that had the same identification number, which was a stolen plane, and then plus the same plane that the Kings were in that had the same number. And so from that point, we were able to double check the actual identification number and very quickly determine that this was not the stolen plane. And once that happened, the Kings were immediately released, and the officers explained what had happened and gave some kind of an explanation for the tactics used.
Okay, well, your police chief has apologized to the Kings. Was that apology just for their inconvenience, or was there any indication that the officers had done anything improperly?
Well, there's certainly no indication on my part or the chief's part. I think they acted professionally, and they did what their training and the circumstances told them they should do. So I'm certainly not second guessing the officer's decision. I believe that if I had been there in their position with the same information that they were provided, that I would have made a similar decision myself. And so, it's very easy to Monday morning quarterback and say, oh, well, these are the Kings, or, oh, I know these people. And, that's always really great when you have, the 20/20 hindsight. But even, if you look at this from a very strict kind of a legal point of view, even our U.S. Supreme Court said the standard of judging situations where the police encounter people and use a level of force is not what after the event was finished and done and you had access to more information. The standard is what the officer, what their actions were based on the information available at the time they're making the decision. And the courts have, there's been other situations where cars have been stopped and thought to be stolen and they weren't stolen. I mean, that has certainly happened. And, the courts have said that, officers, have to make decisions with very small amounts of time involving people that can be very dangerous in a very uncertain world. And then they've granted us, wide latitude to use this level of force and to temporarily detain people, even when it turns out that should not have happened. So, when the chief apologized, I believe it was, the Kings were certainly, I'm not sure what the right word is. I'm sure this was a very difficult situation for them, and it was very unfortunate, and, they did absolutely nothing wrong. So they certainly did nothing to deserve this kind of treatment at the hands of the police. But, by the same, token, it's an unfortunate thing in society that sometimes police are forced into making decisions based on the available information. And in this case, we relied on information from a federal agency that proved to be incorrect.
Lessons for pilots. One of the King's major messages was, this could happen to you. What should I do if it happens to me?
Well, you're right. It could happen to you. I mean, almost anything can happen to anybody when they're just getting in their car. I mean, the chances of being, killed by a drunk driver are about 10,000 times more likely than what happened to the Kings. And, we all know that because we know how many people are, killed on the highways every year. And, that's something that can happen. And so I think one way to look at this is, well, how often has it happened or does it happen? And I don't think this is the first time something like this has happened involving aircraft in the United States. And it probably won't be the last. So the advice would be, if you're in a situation where the authorities, in this case the police, are there and are telling you to do something, then the smart thing to do is to comply with their, you know, commands. And, you know, it may seem like, you know, a long time, but in hindsight, you know, the 30 minutes have come and passed. The matter was resolved peacefully and no one was hurt. So the advice would be to, you know, follow the, you know, the orders of law enforcement. Now, I think there's been some lessons learned on the federal level, especially since I understand that they were notified back in 2009 about this very same problem. And you know, I don't know who's at fault, but it's my impression that people guaranteed that, that this wouldn't happen and the information would be changed in the system, and that didn't happen. So I think that there's some fault here that might, you know, lie elsewhere, but I'm not here to point fingers at a particular person or agency and say I know who that is. You know, it doesn't happen very often, but you know, someone who's very innocent could be stopped by the police on a street corner or driving a car and be suspected of committing a crime based on a description. That is something that just does happen in our society, and maybe it's never happened to the Kings, or maybe it never happened to most of your readers, people who follow your publication, but it does happen. And you know, it's an unfortunate but necessary, you know, element of living in our modern society.
Well, thanks very much for your time today. Russ Niles reporting for AvWeb. Thanks for listening.
This podcast has been brought to you by Aviation Consumer Magazine. For more information on Aviation Consumer, log on to www.aviationconsumer.com.